Campus 103.7 presents a collaboration between me, Patricia Salomone, and my friend Stephen Mangione for the reviewing of the book The Path to Redemption, A Journey to the End of the Earth by Stephen Mangione. This is another review in the series A Book, A Thousand Stories. Welcome back to another episode of the review of this book, which takes us on a long walk from the Pyrenees across the north of Spain to Finisterre, its westernmost point, along the Camino de Santiago de Compostela. Much can happen to pilgrims as they trudge along the Camino, and many are the reasons for embarking on this pilgrimage. Some challenge their stamina by pushing their resistance for walking so many kilometers. Others may be inspired by spiritual, religious sentiments. Others, as our two protagonists, seek redemption and ultimately forgiveness for their human weaknesses. To most, the Camino offers much more than they expect at the start. To some, as in the case of James and Maria, the Camino presents the wonderful gift of love. But nothing in life comes without a price. We follow Maria and James as they resume their walk, leaving behind the iron cross with its numerous pilgrims' prayers and the mound of stones dropped by pilgrims from all over the world. After a couple of kilometers, they reach the village of Mojardin, where they meet a rather unusual character who called himself El Último Templario. He wore the full regalia of the Knight Templars, with the red cross on his breast, and he kept a little personal museum, which he proudly showed to pilgrims. Personally, I would have loved to meet this fellow, because all the way along the Camino, as I said in the very first episode of this series, I imagine knights in armor and ladies in turreted castles, living in times populated by saints, villains and mercenary soldiers. Mine is a fancy of the imagination, but perhaps our author can tell us more about the Knight Templars, as they may have come across their castles and their history while traveling through the mountains and plains of Spain.
Just after the First Crusade, two knights formed a monastic order whose purpose was to protect pilgrims going to the Holy Land. It was based in the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. Their name was the Poor Knights of the Temple of Solomon, but this was shortened to the Knights Templar. It was recognized by the church in the year 1129, and it became very rich and powerful. The knights were sworn never to surrender, and they believed that death on the battlefield assured them a place in heaven, much like the Shaheeds in Islam still up to today. In Spain, they fought alongside the Christian armies in the Reconquista. Because of this, they were granted large areas of land and castles by King Alfonso I of Aragon. They also built many other castles themselves, and they helped and protected pilgrims walking the way to Santiago, and built up a strong trading infrastructure in the Iberian Peninsula. The order was disbanded at the beginning of the 14th century, accused of heresy, and many of their members were killed. In Spain, this did not happen, and thanks to the protection of King James II, they became part of the Order of Montesa, although ultimately the order was suppressed even in Spain. Many myths and legends have grown up around the Templars, their heroic acts, alleged treasures, and mysterious rituals. One of their most iconic castles is in Ponferrada, which I have passed through several times while walking the Camino. It is a large, stereotypical castle with multiple crenellated turrets and battlements, and a bridge crossing the moat to the gateway. The so-called Last Templar, who lives in Manjarín, is named Tomás. He is an eccentric fellow. He wears the uniform of the Templars and greets pilgrims in his shop, come café, come museum, come home, and tells them the history of the Camino.
After this encounter, our pilgrims now proceed downhill. They had to tread carefully not to slip on the loose stones along the paths. Both looked forward to their next stop at Molina Seca, where James booked a little hotel overlooking the river. Here, in a little romantic room balcony, with wrought iron railings hanging out over the river, they enjoyed yet another night of love. They complimented each other in the giving and receiving of the bliss that their lovemaking created in them. James felt protective towards Maria. He wished that no harm would ever befall her. As for Maria, by now she knew James well enough to sense that there was something worrying this man, for whom she now felt so much love, and in whose love she placed so much trust. Resuming their walk, they passed Ponferrada, with its Templar castle complete with crenellated turrets. They were now crossing the Bierzo region, on their way to Villafranca de Bierzo, the old capital of this region and their destination in this lap. Thank you.
Bierzo is a region of Spain bordering on Galicia. It was captured by Roman Emperor Augustus by 19 BC, and it quickly became the largest mining center in the whole Roman Empire, where gold and other metals and minerals were extracted. Many old Roman mining sites are still visible. The most spectacular one is at Las Médulas, which has been declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Here the Romans used a mining technique called ruina montium, or wrecking of the mountain, which consisted in excavating numerous galleries in the mountain and then leading water into it. The water pressure would cause the rock to split away, making it easier to extract the minerals. At Las Médulas, the fracturing of the rock has created a spectacular landscape, where strange formations of red cliffs contrast with the dense forests. Gallego, the Galician language, is one of the four main languages of Spain, together with Castilian, which is Spanish, Basque, and Catalan. Gallego is spoken in a good part of the Bierzo, since it borders Galicia. The mining industry lasted till the last century, but it has now given way to viticulture and agriculture, wind power generation and tourism. The wines of the region are well known, with Mencia and Godello being the main grape varietals. Ponferrada is the present capital of the Bierzo, but Villafranca was the historical capital. It is a small but very attractive town, built on the banks of the river Balcarce, with numerous churches and a castle. It is an important way station on the Camino to Santiago.
James and Maria took a room at the hotel called La Puerta del Perdón, a name which, uncannily, fitted James's aspiration for forgiveness. As we see when we read through the book, James's sense of guilt surfaces every now and then, together with his desperate desire for redemption and forgiveness, and his fear of telling Maria about this terrible calamity in his life. Villafranca turned out to be a delightful little town, where on reaching the Plaza Mayor and over a glass of Bierzo white, they felt relaxed and contented. So much so, that Maria decided it was time for her to open out to James and tell him the reason why she decided to attempt the Camino. Maria says to James, "I have a little confession to make. I had another reason for coming to walk the Camino. It is about my mother. My mother suffered from Alzheimer's disease, and my sister and I used to take it in turns to look after her as she was living at her home." She told him that that evening it was her turn to spend time with her mother, but she received a phone call from her boyfriend and went out on the balcony to answer. She lingered for quite a while, and on returning to the living room where she had left her mother, the old lady was no longer there. She had gone out of the house, and to Maria's shock, she found her in a pool of blood outside the home. She had been run over by a car, whose driver just drove away. "I have not stopped blaming myself. Of course, I also blamed the driver who hit her and did not even bother to stop. If I could find him, I would kill him. James went cold. Against all hope, he asked Maria what her mother's name was. Her name was Antonia Patch. Maybe you read about the accident at the time. It was all over the papers. James was shocked. His whole world collapsed around him. He could hardly breathe. His mind was in turmoil. How could he hide the truth from Maria? Yet how was he to tell her and risk losing her forever? Surely she would hate him. Yet he knew that he could not live with this guilt feeling all his life, and not telling her would be a sham. Still, right then, he could not get to speak, and he decided he needed more time to think. Maria, unaware of the drama that was tormenting her lover, was in high spirits, and ordering a second round of drinks suggested that they drink to their future. To James, that future together now seemed to be in serious jeopardy. To Maria's questioning why he suddenly went so quiet, he replied that at times his demons come back to haunt him. Back in their little hotel room, they made love. To James, unknown to Maria, it was as though there would be no tomorrow. Would this be their last night of love? He woke up early from a restless sleep, and as the day dawned, he became more and more aware that he had to tell Maria the truth, yet he was terrified of the consequences. Next morning, as usual, James was the first to awaken, and he lay awake looking at the woman he loved, and thinking how he would tell her of his involvement in her mother's death. Would Maria understand? Would she forgive? They had a hard day of walking ahead of them, as they now had to face the uphill climb to the next range of mountains, the Cordillera Cantabrica.
Anyone attempting the whole of the Camino Frances, from its starting point in Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port in France to Santiago de Compostela, will have to cross several mountain ranges. He will first have to cross the Pyrenees Mountains, which entails a climb of some 1,400 meters, and it is a real baptism of fire on day one of the Camino. It is a difficult climb, but the views are spectacular, and it is well worth the effort once one reaches the top. The descent into the first Spanish village of Roncesvalles is also quite challenging. Apart from a multitude of hills that one must cross along the way, there are two further mountain ranges over which the Camino passes. The first is the climb up to the pass of Monte Irago in the Montes de Leon, where the highest point of the Camino is reached at the Cruz de Hierro. The second is the climb to Osebreiro in the Cordillera Cantabrica. Both entail a good bit of effort in the climb up and even more care on the way down, which can be treacherous and quite tiring. Osebreiro is a small but very beautiful village at the top of the mountain range. It has a few houses, one or two albergues, a restaurant or two to cater for pilgrims, and a delightful little chapel where mass is held daily for pilgrims. The last time I attended this mass in 2023, all the pilgrims were called up to the altar at the end of the mass. The pilgrims were asked to declare their nationality, and they were then asked to read a small prayer in their native language. At the end of the ceremony, all the pilgrims then received a blessing from Don Paco, the very dedicated local priest. Despite its small size, or perhaps partly because of it, Osebreiro still has a great impact upon the pilgrims who pass through it. There is a feeling of homogeneity, welcome, and otherworldliness about the place, which is hard to explain.
Always walking uphill, they headed towards the village of Osebreiro. On arrival, they found a pretty village which struck them because it seemed so homogeneous with the streets and buildings all built out of the same stone and overlooking a stupendous view below. The village was so crowded with pilgrims that there was no room at the only hotel. They had no option but to go for the annex of the albergue. When, having settled their belongings, they went out for a stroll along the one and only street of the village, they discovered that Mass was about to be said at the village church. Both, each for their personal reasons, needed the spirituality that hearing a Mass could bring. Soft choral music and flickering candle lights created a serene atmosphere in the little church. Maria and James sat side by side, very close together. Maria was transported by the atmosphere, and she felt very emotional. She thanked God and prayed that all would go well. James was in turmoil, with a multitude of different, conflicting feelings. He too sensed the peace and serenity that the place inspired, and yet this was being overshadowed by the fear and the dread that he felt. Would Maria understand? Would she forgive him? At the end of the Mass, the celebrant called all to the altar for the pilgrim's blessing. When they walked out of the church, James knew the moment of truth had arrived. He noticed a bench, secluded amongst the trees, and he pointed it to Maria with a heavy heart and said, "Maria, there is something I need to tell you." Thank you. This episode closes as we partake in James's anxiety. How will the love story, intertwined with the proceedings of the Camino to Santiago de Compostela, develop along the path to redemption? Listen to the repeat of this episode on Thursday at 15 hours. The next episode will be on air in a week's time, on Monday at 18:30 hours, on Campus 103.7. Till then, Stephen and I, together with Jordi, our technician, send you our greetings.